Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregon bow down to Washington.
Welcome back to the Dog Pod. We are your original podcast covering the undefeated, seventh-ranked, game day hosting Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm with Mitch. I'm with Law Dog. Hey, last time we talked, the Dogs, we were heading down to Tucson, and what we saw against SC, holy smokes, I think this is a pretty underrated Wildcat team. Dogs would win 31-24, but starters had to play into the fourth quarter, something new for us. We go into that bye week. We head into, this week, one of the most hyped up regular season games. Oh man, are we ready to go? You feeling good?
Oh boy, BT, I've been waiting for this one.
Oh, this is massive. It is the talk of the town. So gentlemen, look, we're getting ready for the 115th meeting of these two programs. The Dogs with a comfortable 13-win advantage. Hey, and let's be fair, man, the Ducks, they had their fun with Willingham and Sark ripping off 12 straight. But the last six were 3-3 with the Dogs outscoring those turds 218-149. Saturday, game day's here. We're going to get into that. But hey, before we do that and talk about present day, as I said, this is the 115th meeting. A lot of history here. Take us back, Professor Lawdog.
Yeah, let's go back into the Wayback Machine, BT. If you've been listening to the show for a long time, you've heard us go through this history of the Uncivil War before today. But now we're going to take it to a whole new level, okay? So Saturday's game will be the first time in all those 115 meetings Washington and Oregon will play each other when both teams are ranked in the top 10.
Eesh.
Last year was only the second time that both teams finished in the same top 15. But Washington was not ranked there at the time of the game last year. And then 2000, that was the other year where both teams finished in the top 10. So all of this will become more clear in a minute when we talk a little bit about Oregon football history. So there's Oregon football as we know it, right? Which began in the mid-1990s, maybe the late 80s, if you want to go there. And then there's everything else. Since 1994, though, the Ducks have had just two losing seasons. A few close calls, but they have really consistently won for 30 years now. There's no question you got to give them their due. As a program, they've outperformed Washington during that time. And they've even dramatically evened the overall rivalry. You said it was a 13-game edge, but at this point, it's dead even going back to 1967. So despite some early success and two Rose Bowl appearances in the first four seasons of the PCC, BT, we're going back to World War I days.
And
when it was a 4-5-16 league, prior to 1994, it was one of the lowest achieving programs in the league. I mean, they play their cute little video of the 1970s and the cheerleaders, and nostalgia is not for the football program. Okay.
No.
From 1919 to 1994, the Ducks won just three conference titles. They appeared in one Rose Bowl in those 75 years. Well, they were only as high as the runner up four other times. So this was a program that was basically the basement of the Pacific Coast Conference and later the Pac-8. Interesting, Washington played a big role in preventing the Ducks from what would have been their third Rose Bowl appearance in 1948. Ooh. So this is, we're going back in the Wayback Machine here. This year, in 1948, the Ducks and Cal both undefeated in conference play. So there was a vote to determine the conference Rose Bowl representative. That's what the practice was at that time. And you have to remember, back in 1948, you also had Montana and Idaho as members of the PCC.
Okay.
Everyone thought this vote was going to go for Oregon with the six Pacific Northwest schools, but UW switches its vote to Cal and talks Montana into voting with them. Cal wins the vote 6-4 and goes to the 1949 Rose Bowl with Poppy Waldorf. And the Bears finished number 4 in the AP that year, so certainly a good team. But they ultimately lost the Rose Bowl. But back in 1948, this was the equivalent of going nuclear on the Ducks. And there's a lot of bad blood that started even back then. Okay, fast forward to the 1950s here. A slush fund scandal dissolved the Pacific Coast Conference as we know it, shook up college football. UW is right in the center of it. We are going to talk about this in a future episode. But what I wanted to point out in this episode was Oregon was believed to be the tattletale that outed UCLA in this whole thing. And it came up to a vote to expel the Bruins from the Pacific Coast Conference in 1959. Oregon, the Bruins were pointing the finger at Oregon. UW joins Cal, Stanford, USC, and UCLA, dissolves the PCC, and forms the Athletic Association of Western Universities and the AAWU. So this becomes known as the Big Six. When Wazoo was invited 3 years later, but then they changed their name to the Pac-8 in 1968. So this is the Pac-12 today as we know
it. Okay, sounded a little more familiar.
Started because Oregon pointed the finger at UCLA, and UCLA was on the verge of being kicked out of the conference. Amazing.
Neuheisel's still pissed if you talk to him.
Neuheisel's still hacked off about that one. But just imagine a world, BT. The AAWU, the Big Six, goes on playing football as a conference without Oregon and Oregon State when they were left out for 10 years. I mean,
tell me about this glorious utopia.
Yeah, that is a glorious utopia. And now Idaho, by the way, was left on the outside looking in, similar to what's happening to Wazoo and Oregon State today. Okay. So they ended up in the Big Sky. We're going to come around on all of that story later. But UCLA refused to play Oregon between 1959 and 1969, even when they were members of the same conference. So it's amazing. Okay.
They took their ball and went home. I like it.
They took their ball and went home. The Ducks eventually make it back. They eventually play UCLA again, and they've had their way with them since. But add it all up. And the Ducks had a total of 9 winning seasons in the Pac-8/Pac-10 from 1964 to 1994. That's 9 out of 30 seasons.
Ooh, that's a lot
of years. They didn't win more than 6 games in a single season between 1965 and 1988. And when they ended their bowl drought in 1989, they were the only Pac-10 team that had not made it to a single bowl game after the conference had begun permitting teams other than the conference champion to play in a bowl game. So that's a little bit of Oregon history, okay? But let's give the people what they really want, the rivalry, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to the numbers. You said it. It's the 115th meeting between these teams, 61 wins for Washington, 48 for Oregon, and 5 ties. Between 1900 and 1936, this rivalry was pretty even. Ducks were 14-12 and 4 ties, right? Mm-hmm. So the narrative that the Ducks are pushing out there at the game, the Huskies kind of gained an advantage with the leather helmet days, is kind of wrong. One of those ties in 1916 prevented the Ducks from going 8-0, and we were the only team, Washington was the only team that the Ducks did not beat in their Rose Bowl of the 20th century, their only Rose Bowl of the 20th century.
I heard that ended Prohibition in Oregon.
Ended Prohibition. Yep. No, they had a parade to celebrate it.
It's good for them.
But you know, more important to that overall edge in the leather helmet days is the fact that from 1924 to 1967, this game was never played in Eugene. It was played in Multnomah Stadium in Portland. Washington went 14-6 in those games in Portland. The Ducks won the next 3 when the game was moved to Autzen. But beginning in 1974, the Huskies became dominant in the rivalry, winning 17 of the next 20, including 12 out of 13 between 1974 and 1986. So the Huskies were really like building a huge edge on the Ducks in the 20th century. So that's the world we were living in the early 1990s, okay? The Ducks were just beginning to thaw after a 3-decade-long freeze, okay? Rich Brooks, though, finally got the program going, had the Ducks on the rise beginning in 1989. They broke that bowl drought with back-to-back 8-4 seasons in 89 and 90. And despite struggling in the next 3 seasons, we all know what happened next. They had their breakout on October 17th, 1994.
Oh, how dare you.
I had to do it. And by the way, I had to watch this a few times just to get ready for this. And
Why do you do that to yourself?
It never stops hurting. I know. I shouldn't. Huskies are trailing 24-20, just 1 minute left in the game. They move the ball all the way down to the Ducks 9-yard line. They needed a touchdown to win it. They had won 17 out of the last 20 against the Ducks. The Ducks were just 4-3. They had lost to Utah and Hawaii, okay? It never stops hurting. Huskies are moving left to right. Heward looks to the far sideline for Dave Janoski. Kenny Wheaton jumps the route. He's hardly touched. He goes 97 yards for the touchdown. He clinches the win over the Huskies, and the Ducks go their first Rose Bowl since the 1957 Len Casanova squad. And since that game, guys, the Ducks are not only 20-7 against the Huskies, but it really began the golden age of their program. So in 2011, they finally get that Rose Bowl, that win that they've been looking for since World War I. They would go on to win a couple more, two others, plus two Fiesta Bowls during that time. So six, you know, huge bowl wins, nine top 10 finishes, national runners up twice, seven conference titles. They claim it for 2020, I should say, but I'm not going to give it to them because they were runner up to us in the North. But you know, that's the whole point about this. Our joint histories are just so intertwined, right? Washington should have been the North champions that year. And there's this world where the Huskies and the Ducks can't both seem to have good programs at the same time. Their success comes in spite of the other one, right? So I just want to go back one more historical anecdote here. 1995. This was, I think, even more of a game-changing moment for Oregon football, right? The Huskies were coming off sanctions. They were bowl eligible again. They finished 6-1-1 in a tie for first for the conference with USC. Mm-hmm. USC got the tiebreaker, got to go to the Rose Bowl. But Oregon finished third place, I should say, at 6-2. They had beaten Washington, and the coaches, Mike Bellotti and Jim Lambright, getting into it in a public feud, campaigning for a berth in the Cotton Bowl, right? And basically talking trash about the other program. Oregon ends up getting the spot. The Huskies had to settle for the Sun Bowl, despite being the conference co-champions. But this was the first time in modern history the Ducks had really taken something away from Washington, right? And more importantly, it's after this season, the Cotton Bowl season, that Phil Knight asks Mike Bellotti, hey, what do you need to be successful? Bellotti says he wants an indoor practice facility. Knight comes up with the $15 million needed for the project and begins this facility like arms race in the Pac-10 and also, you know, around the country.
That's real college football.
Fast forward to today. Knight has now donated in excess of $1 billion to the University of Oregon. Okay. So, not without its own controversy. There's a great book on the subject, University of Nike, by Joshua Hunt, that details how Knight has leveraged his contributions to the school to make other decisions about, for example, who would be athletic director or even the university president. Oh, right? Dear. We're not going to get into all of that, but this rivalry game on Saturday, boys, it's about a lot more than football. These teams will enter the Big Ten together next season, and we will continue for 116th time, but it feels really right now like it's just getting started.
Oh man. I mean, I appreciate, you know, that I think you gave him a fair shake. And what I've noticed the difference is when I talk to like old money and new money Duck fans, like the old Duck fans that are our age, 50-year-old, and they get it.
They remember the hard times,
but they're having a blast now. They're loving it.
They earned it.
But they remember they do remember those days, and they've earned it and are coming back. But wow. Okay. I mean, arguably this is one of the biggest ones. Maybe this is one of the most anticipated, meeting in Husky Stadium. We're going to get into this thing. So look, 12:30 game day in Red Square. This is massive. And I think the first time that we've had game day, it's usually been a bit in Scorbin, that we haven't been, they haven't been big favorites.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the last couple times this has been, you know, they've been two touchdown favorites plus, right? But this time it's the dogs that are favored by three. Ooh. This is going to be big. Now, a couple things I want to talk about. First of all, let's get into that Oregon offense and what our D is going to have to do. I'll talk a little bit about this. First of all, I got to say one thing. One of our super fans got a big insight piece of analysis, pretty big. I want to share on the air here. Dr. Kevin Comartin, really big piece of analysis. He said, the defense is going to have to step up. The insights for that our fans bring. This is big. So shout out.
Deep
shout out to you, super fan, Mr. Comartin. Let's talk about this. Let's get into it. So look, here we go. The Oregon offense. I mean, look, you got to give them their prop. After they lost Kenny Dillingham to ASU, they hire University of Texas San Antonio's Will Stein as the OC. They're balanced. They call passing plays in about 58% of all the downs. One thing that's interesting, when they come out in multiple tight end, 11 personnel sets, hey, pass play, 70%. It's coming. You just got to stop it. Now, when I talk about what these guys have accomplished, let's also put it into context. This is the 121st ranked schedule so far versus our 16th. Okay? Mm-hmm. Just saying. Everybody's talked about Dink and Dunk Bow, right? Dink and Dunk Bow. And maybe this is why you got to pay fans to show up with these ridiculous yellow signs everywhere rather than real Oregon fans. We'll get into that later. Average depth of target, 6.4 yards. Only 12 deep shots in meaningful play in 2023. One dozen deep passes in meaningful play. Okay. When pressured, his grade drops. So he's 86. His grade drops to 61. Penix's quarterback grade of 93 drops to 72. His average depth, 11 yards. So that's what we're getting here. Just the stats, okay? Now, who's he throwing to? Let's talk a little bit about this. Hey, Troy Franklin is no joke, man. No joke. PFF actually has him as the highest ranked, number 14 in the nation, but the highest ranked in the pack. Real strong run blocking, okay? He's number two in total yards after the run. 7 touchdowns to his name. But hey, who's the next duck after that? 284th ranked, Trayshon Holden, separated by 3 Huskies in between him. So look, I'm just saying, I don't think they have that 3-4 punch we do. Holden 187 yards on the season, but that's what they got. But hey, Troy Franklin, no joke. Bucky Irvin in the rub game, man. Oof, holy smokes. Number 4 PFF ranked running back, number 5 in rushing yards in the pack. Interesting, after Damian Martinez, Jaden Ott, Marshawn Lloyd, and Carson Steele, they lose Noah Whittingham. He's done. Okay, and that hurts a little bit. They don't have that 1-2 punch, but they do have Jordan James to help out. This is the number 8 rushing team in the country, 227 yards a game, far ahead number 1 in the pack. And you remember, he ran up and down on us last year, even in the win, right? The O-line's strong, man. I love that center, Jackson Powers Johnson, real strong, arguably the best center, top center in the pack. Steven Jones at the guard, Johnny Cornelius, they're strong, man. They rank stronger in the pass block, though, than I think in the run block, which is interesting for a good running team. They're better in pass than they are in run block. Now, this is interesting. One thing we're going to have to clean up when I start talking about the defense, I think we're going to talk about this a lot. The Huskies currently have 44 penalties in 5 games for an average of 80 yards a game. They are far and away the most in the Pac-12. They are tied for 3rd most in all of FBS. Clean it up. Worst in total yards in FBS, 94.2 penalty yards per game. Clean it up, and the D is a big, big portion of that, as is holding on the offensive line. Now, what do I want to see? What do we got to win here to slow these guys down? We've talked about them. We know Bo Nix. The guy's like 35 years old. We've been seeing him playing all across the country. We know these guys. Braylon Trice, ETF, and a little bit of Voy. Maybe what I hear, the NCAA, breaking news. The NCAA is making their ruling on the DERF.
What?
Friday. Friday, they're going to rule. And boy, after what they've done for NC, I think they got to release the DERF. Release Zach Durfee. I want that extra edge that you have no tape on. Have him come out. We'll see. Hopefully they do the right thing. The NCAA always does, don't they? Look, they got to pressure Nix and they got to seal the edge. MJ Ali, how about giving me a healthy Thule? And I'm worried, man. I don't know if we get Thule this week, and I'm worried about him, man. A little bit of a Tui Tele. If Tui can't go, I think you're going to see a little bit more Javon Parker, especially in those passing downs. Javon Parker has been a killer in the passing downs. Give me those run stoppers. Give me the pressure. Hands up. Knock down some passes. Hey, Shotaki, man, Taimani, he made a mistake, and he could have been on this crew, right? I want to see these big boys up front do it. Eddie, you got to have the best game of your life, man. I want you back to that COVID year. Spying on Bo Nix. I think Eddie's going to be one of your spies. Alfonso Tupatala, Carson Bruner, man, the gaps. Cleaning up those short passes. Did you know those three compromise 3 of the top 9 highest-rated linebackers in the pack? We got a third of the top 9. Hey, and Raylan, go for it, man. Show up when you're called upon, buddy. This is your time, man. Your number's going to be called. Let's see what you got. Now let's get onto that secondary. Mish Powell, a little bit of Tristan Dunn. Jabbar, man, this is your lockdown day. They're not going to touch you, but if they do, boy, make them pay. Elijah Jackson, Thaddeus Dixon, you got to step up here, boys. This is time. Dom Hampton is our second spy on Bo Nix. Cam Fab, he has stepped up. Vincent Nunley, man, he has been big. We aren't going to know about Asa Turner. I don't know if we're going to have the captain out there. I like Nunley's skill. I like his skill a lot. I worry about not having Asa Turner and him being the captain and keeping everybody straight, but I think we're going to have to see and find out. Cam Fab and Nunley, they hold those top 2 spots in the pack for the highest rated safety play, the 2 of them, Cam Fab and Nunley. Who would have thought that last year, man? I mean, this has been great. So look, both the linebackers and the secondary. Last thing I'm going to say, boys, tackle, 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 man. Bucky Irving murdered us last year. How many little arm tackles that he just slipped through? And we gotta slow these fools down. Drop what we need to drop. Run. Make them dinked up. Stop the run.
Stopping the run. I mean, that was what drove us all crazy last year. The fourth quarter, they just seemed like they were pulling away because we could not get Irving down.
Yeah. This is the time.
They need Dom Hampton. He's been a real physical presence so far. Like, be an intimidator. Right. Like, I love to see them get off to a start where he comes up and lays the lumber on somebody. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, that would be just kind of fantastic to set the tone. But yeah, I mean, they're going to have to tackle. They're going to have some big shots. Right. They're going to score. Right. But hopefully that Husky defense can do enough to absolutely just slow these guys down, get them out of rhythm, kind of like Texas Tech did in their game.
That's right. And, you know, speaking of Texas Tech, Mitch, what did they have, 4 or 5 false start penalties there? This is where Husky Nation comes in. You got to be loud. Let's break that record. They haven't heard this yet. They haven't had a crazy, Texas Tech's the biggest noise that they've had. Let's show them what it looks like this week, man. Got to slow them down. But hey, we're going to have to put up some points because we know these guys are going to score. Let's talk a little bit about that Oregon defense and what Husky offense has to do.
Yeah, well, this is a much improved unit, Mitch. 11.8 points per game, 5th nationally, 255 yards per game, 6th nationally, 4.0 yards per play, 3rd nationally. As BT mentioned, it's against one of the weaker schedules maybe in all of the Power 5, but you got to raise an eyebrow here and say this is not the Ducks team that we've faced in the past.
That's right.
Yeah. I agree, Law Dog. You look the tail of the tape, right? I went back and watched a little bit of that first half of that Colorado game, right? The Huskies clearly, this is going to be the biggest challenge for their offensive line so far, hands down, right? They were very impressive on the amount of pressure that they put on Shedeur Sanders. And, they're going to bring it, man. They're going to be up for this game. It's a huge, rivalry, obviously. But, I'm looking at this UW offensive line. And, this is the game where it'd be really nice to have, a little bit of that more senior Julius Bulow back, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of help them settle down a little bit. And I really, back to BT, your point, most penalized team. Right. One of the most penalized team in FBS. They got to clean up the Husky offensive line needs to have a clean game. I would be shocked if they keep Penix up the whole game from perspective. Mm-hmm. They're going to get a few sacks or something like that. Mm-hmm. But hopefully Grubb's game plan is quick release. Maybe loosen some things up. I'm not sure if our run game's really going to run, show up. I did look and, Texas Tech, they had a back that ran for over 100 yards against the Ducks. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be fascinating to see how balanced Grubb is going to be from a run pass perspective as well.
Yeah. And the pass rush, there's no Thibodeau, and certainly they've got Jordan Birch, who's got a few sacks this season. And I think from a talent perspective, like they're deeper probably at that position than we are. But you got to give Washington O-line some credit here. Only 3 sacks given up. In 5 games this season, that's good for, there's only one team that's given up fewer sacks, and that's Toledo in the nation. So I think that was a big factor in keeping the Huskies in the game last year. I think it will be again this year. We were kind of talking about that O-line, some early struggles. I think you could safely say the last few games, they've kind of cleaned it up a little bit from those early non-conference games. So I actually like the Huskies line in this matchup. And it's a big reason why I think I'm going to pick the Huskies to win this one at home.
Oh, love it. Hey, all the receivers back, fellas. All signs point to J-Mac back and that everybody else has had extra reps on the way. And you're coming off of Dylan Johnson's by far his best game. And I get it. Maybe the Arizona D isn't the Oregon D, but he looked like a man-child possessed.
And last week they really committed to the run in a way that they haven't done. And then you remember last year against the Ducks down in Eugene, it was kind of a little bit of a slugfest in the first half. And then the teams were like, okay, now I see what they're doing and we're going to just air it out. And it was a shootout in the second half, an amazing game. But I could see the same thing playing out early this year as well, where we kind of maybe try to establish that run a little bit. Of course, I say it all the time, almost every week, and then Penix, throws for 400 yards. So what do I know?
with those playmakers and those athletes, right? You can't blame them. There's a piece of me that doesn't mind a little bit of that Arizona sloppiness. Certainly after now, you watch what, how Arizona hung in there with SC this last weekend. But, the fact that the coaches could really get on this team to clean it up for 2 weeks, I kind of like that focus, right? Like clearly all the articles have been, hey, you cannot play this way and expect to win against the Ducks. And, I kind of would prefer that message coming out of that win against Arizona than a blowout down in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. you know, and you had to play a full game. Starters had to play the entire time. And I think, you know, if you were feeling bad about that last week, you watched what Arizona did. And you see a team that is really on the rise, right? And I think a team that's probably going to surprise some people.
Their quarterback's pretty good. Like, he had a nice game against SC as well. I don't begrudge. Hey, a one touchdown win in Tucson and we never have to play there again. Great. Sign me up.
Oh, you know, I mean, what I said before the game there, when I said I would have preferred Delora over Fifita. Wow. Absolutely would have preferred him. You know, that big drop back 20 yards back, making those mistakes and stuff. Heck yeah. Give me that guy to tee up. Holds onto the ball too long, but like the Fifita was, he was solid. So here, guys, I mean, look, Husky Nation is going to have to step up and be so freaking loud that Bo Nix can't hear anything. You know, let's help out our team this week, and I think we're gonna big sellout, big loud, big loud team. Now, I'm gonna put you guys on the spot here. Over under 67 says Washington by 3, right? So Vegas wants this thing 35-32 dogs. How say you?
Oh, give me the over all day. I mean, is Vegas asleep behind the wheel here? I mean, that's easy money for sure, considering Mitch's sterling record on Pac-12 picks so far this year. I'm also going to get on the dogs, too, to cover 3.
I like the Huskies to win. I like the over. 3 is all it was last year. I think you'd be, you know, you could, it could be a push, but I think the Huskies are going to win it.
Yeah, 3 is all it was last year, Law Dog, but we were, what, a 2-touchdown dog last year?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's all it takes. Mm-hmm. Takes 3.
Yeah. I'm with you on this one, guys. You know, you might bait me into this thing if you got it closer to 6, closer to 7. This is no disrespect to Oregon. I think I'm sure that both these teams are thinking, in the Pac-12, I believe that this is a clear 1-2, right? This is the clear 1-2. And I think USC is right there. And there's a clear 3. We could debate all day. And I think if you ask every Pac-12 fan who the 4th best team is, you're going to probably get, you know, as many answers as people you ask. But these top 2, I think this is who it is for a reason. Give me the dogs here to cover this thing, to win it and to cover by a little bit. And I don't really give a shit if they cover as long as they get that W. This one is big. Game day is going to be here. National stage. We don't even have to talk about the number of recruits that are coming that just keep piling on. How many recruits are going to be at this thing?
The stadium is going to be electric. I mean, the stadium will be absolutely electric on Saturday. I can't wait.
And all eyes of the country are going to be on this one. I can't wait. This is going to be freaking amazing. All right. So much more to talk about, guys. Quick recap of the last couple weeks here. Lada, give us the count, man. You got the receipts. How many? I'm just gonna start by saying this. How many games back is everyone?
Well, let's just say BT. I'm gonna start throwing away the receipts. BT's got a 3-game lead over myself in second place, who took it on the chin last week. Yep. And Mitch is trailing by 5 games and running out of time. I would say
this has got to be a big week. So we should, he's just gonna wait for whatever we pick, and he has to take the opposite at this point.
Yeah, let him pick last. Let him pick last.
Okay, he's going full Costanza here. Here we go. Recap of the last couple weeks, man. The Beavs, man, they had a ripping pair of games. This was amazing. I mean, then, look, number 10, pretty wild, right? A pretty wild game that they had, 21-7 at home. They take it, then they go down to Cal 52-40 in Berkeley, right? They don't cover that 13 against Cal, but I don't think Beaver Nation cares, man. They're number 15 in the land, looking pretty good. How about SC? The Fire Grinch roars are loud after giving up 41 to CU and to SC. They gave up 41 apiece to those guys, but they're still winning, man. They put up 48 in Boulder. They put up 43 in overtime at home, both wins. So no covers. SC 6-0, but dropping to number 10 based on those performances. ASU, on the other hand, man, whoo, these guys, they know how to cover. They just can't find a way to win. They lose 21-24 at Cal, 27-24 at home to CU. With UW, ASU, Utah, UCLA, Oregon, and Zona on the schedule and missing Stanford, where's the win? It is one of the funniest things about this last season of the Pac-12 that Stanford and ASU don't play each other. Now, look, our old friends, the Cougs, they're feeling high. They were feeling super high on themselves after that win against Oregon State, and they're popping up to number 13, but a lackluster 25-17 loss, giving up 13 unanswered in the fourth quarter and showing some holes in that Wazoo offensive line in the Rose Bowl that drops the Cougars to 4-1 and now number 19. Let's get into it this week, okay? Friday night. Hey, before we get into a Friday night game, speaking of Friday night, Mitch and I will be at the old Salmon Bake at UW, and a big shout out to the one and only, the Flan Dog, Stephen Flanagan, chef, mentor, brother. He just passed away. What a legend of a freaking Husky. Shout out Stephen Flanagan. Man, there's going to be a lot of tipping of the cold ones to you on Friday night. What a legend. So we won't be watching, but we still got to make a pick. It's 1-4 Stanford heading to 4-2 Colorado, 7 p.m. on ESPN. Vegas says Buffs favored by 11.
Yikes. I am taking the Buffs here. And I just am doing that because I just think Stanford is so terrible.
Pretty bad.
Day game.
I agree.
Yeah.
This is tough. Buffs too.
I'm going to look, if it was the day game, maybe one of those 10 a.m. crazy CU starts, but a Friday night raucous environment and everybody out there is showing up. I don't think Stanford can do this thing. Probably by 2 touchdowns. You're not going to tempt me with 11. Give me the Buffs. We're all on that one. Saturday night, and what might be one of the lowest TV ratings of all time. They're going up against us. I don't know why they did this. 3-3 Cal against 4-1, number 16 Utah on Pac-12 Network. Same time as us. Utes favored by 13.5.
Yeah, still no sign of rising, right? And it seems like maybe it was kind of over-optimistic to think he'd be back this season at all. I mean, here we're at week 7. So I like the Utes at home to win, but I'm going to take Cal on these points here.
Yeah, I think that's too big with the way that Utah's been playing with their offense. It's just kind of mired. Now, of course, they're back at home, so they are a different team, but very similar. I'm going chalk here as well. I'm taking Cal. I think that spread's too big.
Interesting. Okay, gentlemen. All right. So, you know, I think this is tough. I will say, yes, Cam Rising, but at the same time, I don't know if they have an offense even when he comes back. What is he worth, 7, 10? He's not worth 20. This Utah offense is a mess. And I think Cal finally found their quarterback in Fernando Mendoza. I like what this kid is doing. I think they cover. I don't know if they win, but this Utah team, I hate to say this. Look, respect to Utah, back-to-back champs, but I'm not feeling it. This guy's, I don't know how they still get that number 16 on their backs. Give me Cal to cover that. Let's keep rolling on Pac-12 Network, 4 p.m. Can Zona take its close calls and actually get a win? It's 3-3 Zona in the Palouse at 4-1, number 19, Wazoo. Cougs favored by 8.5.
Yeah, I'm actually going with Zona here. I kind of think that I think they might get another close one. I'm still not a total buyer on Wazoo. I know, I mean, look, they're playing really well, but I don't know that 8.5 they're covering against this plucky Arizona team. So I'm giving the Wildcats.
We got to spice this up a little bit and have some dissension. Give me the Cougs. At home, on the Palouse, pissed off after that UCLA loss. Arizona got a little bit of a hangover. They were so close against SC. Let's see if they get pounded up there. I like the Cougs.
You know, and it's you think about these Zona teams who just struggle playing up in the Palouse against the Cougs, and you might think that game against UCLA was a blip because otherwise the Cougs have looked really, really strong. Let's not forget about that Wisconsin win and what they have. But Zona is 5-1 against the spread, and I think it continues this week. I think Wazoo wins. I think Arizona covers. All right, this next one, this is a big one. We got three real big Pac-12 games. Big one for the Pac, 4:30 on NBC. It's number 10 SC traveling to South Bend against number 21, 5-2 Notre Dame, the Irish coming off a 20-33 loss at undefeated Louisville. Still favored by 2.5 at home against the Trojans. I think it's fair to say, all right, we're all Trojan fans this week, man. We want these guys to win, right? Do it for the Pac. Keep playing undefeated at this point. That may change in the future, but what do you think, guys? 2.5, Notre Dame.
This is the type of game where SC has always kind of like, they always show up in these games, I feel like. And even though they've been kind of absent for a couple weeks here, I think they're going to do it again. I actually, it's tough to pick them to win after what we've seen the last couple weeks, but I will take the 2.5 here and I'll take the Trojans.
Yeah, you know, this is tough, right? Because you want to see the Pac-12 show up well. I agree with Law Dog, man. SC usually finds a way. I think their defense is going to bite them this time around. And gosh, the folks on Grinch is just going to get louder and louder. I see Notre Dame winning by a field goal.
Woo! This is going to be a tough one. I really want SC to win this thing. And I do think, you know, look, it's a different style of football that they're seeing and what Caleb Williams can do. It's just his defense. My gosh, man, can they even get off the field and they travel well? This one's tough. USC is 2-4 against the spread. I think that trend continues. I hate to say this, man. I really want SC to win this. I think it's good for the pack. It's good for future games that we're playing, but I think this is the Irish. How about the late game, guys? This one is big. Number 18. Again, three big pack games this week. Number 18, 4-1 UCLA at number 15, 5-1 Oregon State on Fox at 5 p.m. So after our game, we can continue on and watch this thing. Beavs favored by 4.5.
Oh, man. I thought I saw this line lower than that, and I was getting ready to pop the Bruins here. Pop the Beavers. I think I am going to switch to the Bruins here. I'm taking my 4.5 on the Bruins here. Dante Moore, I'm liking what I'm seeing.
You know, that Reser Burrito Stadium is a tough place to play when they get those chainsaws going. I think this crowd's going to be up for it. And yeah, it'll be interesting. Oregon State is kind of grinding these games out, right? Like they're not covering, but they're winning and they're imposing their will. I think they do the same to UCLA. Give me the Beavers.
This one is really tough. I think it's real tough to come into Corvallis, but boy, the UCLA team that I saw last week, holy smoke, they look good. And this is a real resurgent defense that UCLA has not had in quite some time. I have a feeling that these guys, this UCLA team, I could be wrong, this might be the fourth best team. This might be the third best team of the pack. I'm giving UCLA on this one. I think if they don't win, they're going to at least cover. Give me UCLA. Let's see some separation here. Guys, we got a big slate, but there's a few more things that we got to talk about this week. First of all, a couple big things, but one thing, a big shout out, and people remember him. Talk to us about Jim Capel.
Yeah, I mean, for those of you that might ESPN Page 2 fans, he brought a lot of humor into sports journalism, right? This is a guy who grew up in R.A. Long, went to small high school, went to UW, worked for the Daily, wrote about his high school in his professional career, was a great baseball writer, fantastic baseball writer, had a fantastic book called The Devil Wears Pinstripes, and is adamant in his hate of the New York Yankees, which was fantastic.
Preach, brother. Just, Capel.
He was so funny. And, you know, I think his nephew, Christian, wrote a really great piece in an homage to him, and not only about his impact on his personal life, but other folks. And there were some just great lines from Jim in that, along the lines of, hey, if you call somebody out in print, show them your face the next chance you get, right? Like, that's pretty cool in terms of, you know, I think just his general view on life. Such a nice guy, and really kind of a terrible loss to a terrible disease, but like he'll be remembered. And I remember growing up reading his articles and just literally laughing out loud. And so what a great writer to be able to bring that to sports and bring color in a unique way.
I always enjoyed Jim Capel. I always enjoyed his writing on ESPN. And plus, he was bringing to ESPN, he was a Seattle guy. And there just weren't that many Seattle guys in the national, journalism, sports journalism field. So it was really, I never missed one of his articles. It was always entertaining. Anyone who's had a family member who's died along the same lines as Jim Capel knows how terrible it truly is. And it's a big loss.
When you talked about legacy, could there be a better legacy of his nephew, who, for my money, is the best writer in the business about UW? I mean, not only from his perspective and that he takes it, he's everything's really well written. And what Christian Capel does, I think, for on Montlake, I'm happy to send him, our subscription money, because I think what he does is incredible, and he's really talented. And what a neat legacy, that his uncle was able to pass that down. That's pretty sweet. Guys, this week, man, it just seemed like the news kept coming and coming. But we did hire an athletic director.
Yeah, Troy Dannon from Tulane, who kind of came up through Northern Iowa. I think he attended Northern Iowa, later became athletic director there, then moved on to Tulane. And, you know, Tulane obviously has been one of the most successful football teams in the American Athletic Conference the last few years, of course, beating USC in the Cotton Bowl last year. So, my immediate reaction when I saw that news was, one, I'm glad that they kind of followed through on their promise to do a national search and really tried to find the best candidate. And also, you know, I think that by entering the Big Ten next year, I think that that opened them up to a new, you know, diverse pool of candidates. So I'm overall a little optimistic. I did catch his interview with Softy today. And, you know, it sounds like he's saying all the right things. He's excited. Obviously, the proof will be in the pudding, right? There's a long way to go. Probably the first big decision that's going to be coming his way is Mike Hopkins. So we'll see what happens with that. And, you know, I think it's a good start to his career.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got to clean up the basketball program. I mean, he's got our financial situation, right? Once the debt service goes up from 10 million to 17 million. You know, I love what he said about NIL too, that he comes in and said, hey, this is the, we got to win with this thing. This is the future, right? I love that. You're thinking modern. And I think, you know, if you look back and there's some nice stories about what he did for the student athletes in Tulane that were victims of the hurricane and what happened and all the craziness that took on the school there. That was pretty cool. So, you know, I'm glad. I want to see, you know, does the leopard print jacket fit? Was it left behind? And can he squeeze his way into that thing?
I think that probably made its way into a carry-on on Alaska Airlines about a month ago. I had to guess.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll see that on the sidelines when the dog butt heads down to the SC game. But we'll see. Any other thoughts on this guy?
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting. When I was reading the articles, I really don't know that much about him. But it was interesting how he reached out to Jen Cohen. And, you know, it sounded like Jen gave him like somewhat of a blessing and a nudge to say, heck yeah, apply, you know, get after it. Right. And, you know, we've spoken about this before. I think Jen did an amazing job to set the table, right? And she had really great success. So I'm glad that there's a little bit of a relationship there. And you know, quite frankly, that she's maybe, you know, helping leave another little legacy there behind. So we'll see what happens. But hey, you know, you spoke to his previous success. Let's see if he can help us take that next step. And it's gosh, the table set. What a great opportunity with what's ahead for the Huskies.
Yeah.
And I'm
glad this thing didn't drag on forever as well.
Yes, I agree.
No, it's imperative, right? Because you got big decisions to make about basketball. You're going to transition into the Big Ten. There's a lot of work to do. So I think Kausei deserves credit for doing an efficient national search, getting it done in relatively short order, and hiring what looks like a good candidate. Also sounds like DeBoer and Chris Peterson were at least, you know, consulted or involved, and they both were kind of enthusiastic about it. So I think that those are all good signs. I think right now there's no reason to think that this isn't going to work out.
Oh, hey, Law Dog, do I hear the Chris Peterson hatchet has been buried from your analysis there?
Friends again.
Let's just say the Christmas card list will be revised this year, Mitch.
Oh, plus one. Get an extra stamp there in the Law Dog household. Hey, news from Upper Campus doesn't stop, though, Law Dog. Apparently the Legal Eagles up in UW have been working away the night. Let's hear.
Yeah. What happened? Well, so this is, you know, to be honest, BT, I have not read like the pleadings or anything like that, but Washington has basically moved and filed what's called an intervener to get it into the litigation with Wazoo and Oregon State against the Pac-12. And basically what their motion is saying, our interests are at stake here, but nobody's actually representing us. So they're going to move to try to have it dismissed. I'm assuming try to get that refiled in a federal district court or something like that, where it's a little less home territory, a little less home cooking for the Cougs. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the strategy here. But basically, I think they're trying to just kind of accelerate and fight back against, you know, the Cougs and Beavs for trying to distribute. And what's really at stake, the assets of the conference, right? What's really at stake, though, is this college football playoff money. And we don't know how much of it there's going to be. There's reports that it could be as much as 160 or 180 million or something like that. So you know, if I were those schools, I wouldn't want to walk away from that and give it up willy-nilly either. So I think that's probably what's going on and what's at stake here. I think John Wilner's been saying it all along. We're probably headed towards a settlement, and I think we probably are. This is one step in the tactical process to get there by getting it out of Whitman County, where the current judge overseeing the case is a Cougar season ticket holder and alum.
Makes sense. Wow. It's a tough look for you, Dub, right? To be on the other side
of
this thing.
It is.
You know, to little brother, but even
morally, we are not on the high ground here, right?
It's just
a tactical thing, fighting over the money that's, you know, that's set to come to the conference. I think those NCAA tournament units and whatnot, I think that's probably been left behind. And, you know, some of the emergency funds and some of the other things that they've been talked about as assets the conference possesses. But that college football playoff money, I think that would be a tough pill to swallow to see Wazoo and Oregon State divvying that up when Oregon, Washington, and then maybe another team this year, the teams that have actually kind of been to that tournament on behalf of the Pac-12.
Totally. Wow. Freaking Cougs, man. This just kills me. I love the Coug Nation, everyone, let's all go to game day. Let's outnumber the Huskies. Let's every alum in the world. I'm like, where do you start driving east? Because you guys play and host Arizona and go freaking, that may throttle you guys. So show up and go support your damn team. You actually have a decent squad this year. They never disappoint, man. This got everybody excited. We don't have dates yet. We got Big Ten schedules and matchups.
I kind of a nice surprise early in the week last week, right? But you see Washington, we talked about it a little bit, I think, right? Was whether they were going to play all the West Coast teams in a pod, kind of like they were doing with some of the protected rivalries throughout the Big Ten. There's just too many teams. So what they've decided to do is give you one protected rivalry. Some schools have maybe a couple or up to a couple, but then you're playing everybody else at least home and home, but no more than three times over the 5-year cycle. So that's why they came out with that 5-year chart to show you that's kind of the balance of the schedule that we're going to have going forward. Home and home against, you know, Indiana in 5 years. But three games against USC, UCLA, and then five games against Oregon. So I think that's kind of what we can expect going forward, too.
Yeah, one of the things I thought was interesting, though, is that I thought we would play the former PAC teams. We'd play them every year.
Yeah, they just don't have the bandwidth to do it all if you want to play 9 conference games, because then you're never going to play, you know, the other teams in the conference. So I think that's the Big Ten's thinking about it.
Yeah, yep. They're looking at
balance. They're looking at balance across playing, you know, breadth across those matchups. Some pretty fun future Husky road trips, though. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit.
Hey, let's
Happy
go, let's
Valley.
Go. Yeah. Yeah. Let's go through this thing really quick. So, hey, 2024, you know, so home Michigan, Northwestern, UCLA, USC, we get all both the LA schools. And I started getting pinged immediately when this came out from a lot of the Michigan alums that we know in Seattle who said, now I don't have to wait till 2028. We've been waiting for this game for a while. A lot of Michigan fans in Seattle were excited for that game, but the away games, Indiana, Iowa, Oregon, Penn State, and Rutgers. And I think all of our eyes went immediately to Penn State.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good luck getting to Happy Valley, BT.
That's what I heard from.
You gonna fly into Pittsburgh? You gonna fly into Baltimore? What are you gonna do there?
That's funny. I heard that from shout out to another super fan, Mr. Sean McFarland out there, who said to me, he's like, yeah, you know, it's great. You can get there a lot of different ways. And I thought, you can go to Pittsburgh. You can go to DC. You can go to Newark. You can go to JFK. And I thought, well, you must be in the middle of freaking nowhere, because you've named five cities that are all equidistant from this spot.
Well,
I don't care, man. I'm going.
You can fly to Chicago and get a flight to State College. They have an airport, but I'm just saying, like, this trip, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. You're right.
Don't care. Count me in. I'm in.
The other fun road trip on that list is Iowa too, right?
Yeah,
like these are going to be interesting, fun, new places to go and check out.
A lot of Rose Bowl history between the Huskies and Iowa.
That's right. Hey, this one could be good. 2025. Let's talk about it. Home Illinois, Ohio State. Ooh, there's going to be a lot of Ohio State fans that are coming in for that one, 2025, and a lot of those locals as well. Oregon, Purdue, and Rutgers away games. Maryland, Michigan, UCLA, and Wisconsin. I hate to say it again. All eyes on Wisconsin. I'll probably do the UCLA trip mm-hmm. again with the kids because I got to have that L game. But, hey, Wisconsin, count me in Camp Randall.
It's going to be fun.
That's a place we haven't played in probably 30 years. And there was no kind of way we were ever going to be able to do it again. So I'm definitely not going to miss that one.
No.
And, you know, the intel from the Michigan State crew was that's a fun place to go to. Right. So that was top of their list to say, oh, don't miss that one.
Do I have to play that game where I throw a clawed hammer in the air after drinking to pound nails into a stump? I really feel like that's an accident waiting to happen.
It's totally safe. 100% totally safe. Sanctioned.
Good. All right. I'm going to take your word for it.
I got a liability waiver for you, BT. We can
this game. Like, wow, it really made our game seem soft that we play here. 2026 home, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, and Penn State. Again, I bet Penn State shows up in numbers for that one. Away, Michigan State, Nebraska, Oregon, Purdue, and SC. I'm going to hit that SC game on the road and also count me in for Nebraska.
Yeah. Cornhusker Nation, man. You know, I remember going out there and all the beer in a bar was red. They had red dye in it.
Oh,
it was fantastic. What a fun, great game atmosphere.
Mitch Jenkins' body weight and red dye number 15. This explains so much.
I'm heading to Michigan State. I'm looking for the biker gang, Mitch.
Yeah, that's
ooh, nice.
He's going back. You're talking to an inducted member, you know, of the Pilgrims here. I got some references for you. 2027. Again, this is a 5 home game with Maryland, Michigan State, Nebraska, Oregon, and SD at home. So, boy, wow, we get those guys again. Away, Minnesota, Northwestern, Penn State, and Rutgers. I think, Mitch, you and I are the same one, man. Minnesota, I'm heading to that one. 2027, give me that one all day.
Row the boat, guys. BT.
What are you guys talking about? My God. Hey, Northwestern, Chicago is a great town, let me tell you, in the fall.
Minnesota, 2-1. Last time I checked, it's a democracy. You lose. You're on the wrong side of this one, Law Dog. We're going to Minnesota. Hey, 2028, home games, Michigan, Northwestern, UCLA, and Wisconsin. Again, I bet a Wisconsin Nation. And again, we'll probably see all those Michigan fans that live here. Away games, Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, Ohio State, and Oregon. That's going to be a house divided in the old BT household. Ohio State and all the family that lives out there in Cleveland. Here we go.
I got some roots in D.C., BT, I spent a few years over there, and I'm going to be heading, I think, maybe to that Maryland game. But, you know, I got 5 years to decide. So,
oh, man, just licking my chops.
Sounds like BT might be on the couch for a few nights after maybe an Ohio State upset.
It's going to be fun. My true feelings about that program may come out at some point during the game. Hey, so here we go, guys. We got some great schedules that are coming up, and this week is the big one, man. Game day is in town. Again, 115th meeting of these two programs, and the first time that we have faced each other undefeated and both ranked in the top 10, this is going to send one team, I'm guessing, into the top 5, if not the top 4, maybe after this, into a catapult into all the rest of the conversations that happen, right? As soon as after this week happens, there's going to be a loser and there's going to be a winner who people are talking about as a CFP candidate nationwide after this game. It is going to be massive. Husky Nation, show up, be loud. Loud on third down, freaking don't sit down. Be loud the whole entire game. Be there early. It's going to be tough to get into the stadium with this sellout. So get there, get in your seat, 30 minutes. Let's make that team feel welcome. Let's get that big win. Can I get a go, Dogs?
No. Dogs. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington!